guest with us today, Gustavo Valiente from Cartagena, Colombia, who is both an English and Spanish teacher. And he's going to share some tips with us for teaching both online and in person. Welcome, Gustavo. Great to have you with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So, Gustavo, you and I had a conversation a little while back about your techniques for engaging your students and motivating them to speak in particular. I'd love you to share with our listeners how you've found these methods of engaging your students to work.
Yeah, like one of the, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
So one of the things that I always had with my lessons as a student that kind of like I struggled with was my teacher would bring in things that were not that relevant to try to explain a topic, like the past tense and what did Da Vinci used to do? What was his method? Trying to practice the past tense doing that. And there was a separation between the topic and how much I care, because I don't care much about it. Like in that time, it was just words that didn't mean anything to me. So one of the things that I realized as I started teaching is the most important thing is that the topic has to be relevant for the person. You know, it has to be something that the person wants to share with you, because it boils down to the simple concept of I want to communicate with someone. That's the point of taking a language lesson. You know, people want to talk, they want to know someone. What is the other person like? What do they like? What things they dislike? So the method started to evolve, and the closer you are to the person's, if the topic is close to the person, like why did you break up with your ex? Tell me about that. What happened? How did it go? Why do you hate them? What did they do to you that hurt you? What did they used to do that you love? The person is no longer thinking about the linguistic structure, but they want to tell me about that topic. And then I help them and guide them. All right, so you hate them. Let me tell you, that is the way you say it. And then that will create a very strong connection to the language, because they say, I remember Gustavo explaining to me how to express that I hate them. I still love them. They were relevant to me. I care about them. I love this about them. So that's basically, the closer you are to it, the better the person will have confidence and want to talk, because in the end, we want to talk, we want to speak.
Connecting the heart and the mind. Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
I like that method. So, how do you implement that with a larger group of 15 or 20 students? I can see one-on-one that being very effective, but a little more challenging with groups of students.
Yeah, with groups of students also works the same way, because again, if you boil it down to the core, we all have opinions on things, right? So if you bring a lesson regarding to, I don't know, likes and dislikes, which is a very regular lesson topic, and then you start talking about likes, what do you like to do? And someone says, well, I like to do this, and then you start interacting with that person and having someone else, what do you think about that? Well, I don't like that. Why don't you like? And then in a lesson, you start everyone. You know, everyone starts talking and connecting to those topics that are being discussed, because we all might have a take on it, right? And also you have to push it a little bit with the students. Like, I remember that at the university when I was teaching, whenever I would ask a student, so what kind of music do you like? And back then, champeta, which is a, you know, a traditional Cartagena music genre, people were not very, it was a bit, it had a negative perception in society about 10 years ago, 15 years ago. People wouldn't be proud to say that they like champeta, right? So people start talking about the music they like, and they go with the classic, you know, salsa, bachata, trance, electronic music, all of these genres. But then when you say, what about champeta? And then that is a triggering sort of way for people to start, oh, I don't like champeta, I think champeta this. And that way in a group setting also works, because everyone connects to something that we are discussing, and we all in the end talking, I like champeta, I don't like champeta, I enjoy this, because, and that's, it's sort of the same way, it boils down to the core. Tell me about it, tell me about this thing that is relevant to you or not.
Okay, that's great. Well, how do you actualize that in the context of I've worked with a lot of teachers who kind of feel stuck in the textbook, if you will, and getting them outside the textbook to actualize what you're talking about, particularly if the students are lower level and maybe they don't have the confidence to express themselves on these topics. How do you?
I've hired teachers, they struggle a lot because they're very book centered, right? So I guidance that I give them, all right, I want this person that by the end of this lesson is able to say X, Y, and Z, right? I don't care much how you do it, but that's the guideline. The problem with the book is that in my experience, the book becomes the guiding factor of the conversation between two people. Shouldn't be quite that way. The guiding factor should be those two people wanting to know about each other, right? So every time it's going to be different. So for example, well, you're a doctor, right? So if we started a lesson, I would like to talk about that, but I wouldn't have that conversation with someone else. And then back to the like or dislike lesson, talking about your topic, talking about what you studied, what you like, what didn't you like, talking about academics. The closer you are to the person's interests, the better. Because the book, the topics that the book has, don't tend to fit the person. And we are in the end, just humans wanting to know. I don't know about you. I want to gossip about that guy that did something. I want to tell you how much I loved something. The problem with the book is that it eliminates a lot of that simplicity. Complicates it too much, right? There are benefits to it as if you use it like as a soft guideline, if you might, but not like a hard one. Like, you know, if the topic says in the book talking about describing people and the vocabulary that it's using, I don't know, has nothing to do with our cultural setting. I don't know, like the vocabulary in the book is more European centric, blue eyes, blonde, tall. It has nothing to do with our setting. It's problematic, so you have to adapt. The book is like, you know, this is what the roughly result that we want, but we have to always adapt it. And, you know, boil it down to you are this, I'm here, let me talk.
Yeah, that's really important. It's challenging to get the teachers outside the book, right? I think it's like security also, you know, to have
it's
that.
It's a safety blanket for a lot of teachers because, you know, like, this will tell me the topics, this will give me, but the more you do it and the more you see how people connect with what you're trying to teach, you realize that the book is important, but it shouldn't be the center of it all. It should be just soft guidelines, if you mind.
So how do you, given that our audience is teachers, how do you encourage teachers, motivate teachers to kind of let go of that security blanket, so to speak? Because I know it's a challenge for a lot of teachers that are ingrained in, you know, having to, for their curricula, for their principals, for the teacher, the people they're responsible to, they have to say, you know, they get through a certain amount of material.
Yeah.
So how do you bridge the, you know, the institutional needs, if you will, if they're working in a school or a university and they have to prove that they've accomplished a certain curriculum, but you also want them to just use it as a base, not as the Bible, so to speak, not as the gospel.
Yeah. I think
get out. Yeah.
Talking to people is fun, general. You know, interacting with them is fun. And I think if you have an institutional responsibility of following a certain program, certain, you know, that you do a little bit of that, but connected to that I was telling you, you want them to, you know, have a grammatical objective, like you want them to understand how to use, I don't know, the past tense, but the book doesn't quite work with the vocabulary or topics. I remember once they were showing like a lesson of Avatar, right? And nobody had seen the movie because it wasn't here yet or something like that. And then how can I talk about this movie? So even though the book, and I firmly believe this, you have an institutional responsibility with the students to be able to get what the book is demanding of them. But there are different ways of getting that, because in the end, if the book, the vocabulary of the book is more about the grammar that the book provides and how you get that. If the book is about the past tense and it's a whole unit about Da Vinci, right? We can skip Da Vinci and just add anything else as long as it's past related, right? So there are different ways to get to the same result, right? It's the point is that the student, by the end of your session or your lesson or your program, has that information that is required, which always boils down to conversational. Whatever conversation, like the European framework of reference is great, because that way it doesn't tell you the topic. You just say, can the student do this? And that's the way you can bridge that institutional responsibility. Yeah, I mean, I didn't fully do the vocabulary or the things of the book. That reading, we didn't do that reading. We did this one because I found it more relevant, and the result is the same. Now, after I taught this student, they can do X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. It's the challenge is helping the teachers have the confidence to do that. I think it also comes with years of teaching. You naturally...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in the end, it's, you know, taking a risk. You failed, and that's the other thing. Like, there are going to be a bunch of lessons that are going to go wrong, but the best lesson you will ever do is the one you did, and then you improve on the next one.
Right.
Because a lot of teachers are afraid of going off the book because what if I fail? It's fine. Just admit that you made a mistake. Oh, sorry, guys, that didn't quite work. Let me try something else. Let me try something else.
Right.
The point is that keeping that the best lesson you did was the one you did, but you can improve on that. That doesn't mean I should have done. Should have, could have, would have are dangerous conjugations.
Right.
Dangerous tenses, right? So yeah, that's it. Take a risk and see how it works. Learn from it. Because in the end, it's just two people or a group of people talking and interacting and having fun with each other.
Right. One thing I really found helpful too is when you ask the students to bring materials to class that they really like you're saying, they're really interested. Whether they bring a YouTube, you know, video, that they bring, but, you know, bring or send to you electronically a link to a podcast or something that
absolutely
they're watching, then again, it engages them naturally at that level.
Especially as a teacher, because generally we are teaching younger people often, or people that are in a different backgrounds. As a teacher, I don't know everything. And it's very fun when someone brings something that you never would have been able to find unless that student told you, hey, check this out. Yeah. I have this. So it's that interaction. We're just people working, trying to communicate. That's the core of it to me.
Yeah, that's great. You reminded me, I had a student come to class the other day with the language app Cake. Have you heard of that?
Cake.
Cake, like the cake you eat, C-A-K-E.
Oh, Cake. No. Cake.
It's a language app for Spanish speakers to learn English, and it's actually kind of done bilingually. So it's but again, like you say, when the students bring things to us, we learn as well. We can't stay on top of everything.
Yeah.
Especially in the next generation.
Absolutely. Especially with all of this new technology and things that keep popping up left and right.
Right. Let them use AI and bring ideas to you to class.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about communication. It doesn't matter how much AI evolves in the end, unless they're able to describe what a food smell, what a feeling feels, they're just helping, right? Because that's what I want with my lesson. I want to know what my students are like. I want to know what triggers them, what they love, what makes them happy, what makes them angry. That's it. It's just, the more you reduce it to that, the better the lessons will be. And the results, of course.
Okay, we really appreciate your time. So in summary, tapping into students' interests as much as you can in any given lesson, whatever grammar you're trying to teach, always try to tap it, connect it with what's culturally relevant and
absolutely,
particularly to their personal interests. Anything else?
Yeah.
Like to know?
Just take risks as a teacher. Just if a lesson fails, learn from it. That's not the worst that can happen. That's the other thing. Just see what happens. You know, like it's better to fail by trying than just fail by just doing the same that you have done always. You know, it's the definition of madness.
That's how we learned English, is by trial and error. That's how
absolutely.
How you learn a musical instrument.
Yeah.
Thing as teachers, we need to do it in our practice as well.
Yeah, Absolutely.
Thank you, Gustavo. We really appreciate your great tips today and hope many
You're most
teachers
welcome.
out there will implement them in their classrooms.
Dale.
Dale.